Chapter 38 Avasarala. Avasarala screamed. Her breath ripped out of her throat, abrading her flesh as it passed. She tasted bile in the back of her mouth, and her legs trembled, ached, burned as she tried to push the steel plate another centimeter away. "Come on," Peter said. "You can do this." She screamed again, and the plate moved away. Her legs went almost straight. The impulse to push through and lock her knees took effort to resist. It might snap her knees back the other way, but then at least this would be done. "That's 11, Peter said. "Go for 12. One more. "Fuck your mother. Come on, just one more rep. I'll be here to help." "You're an asshole and nobody loves you," she gasped, lowering her head. The worst was the nausea. Leg day always seemed to mean nausea. Peter didn't care. He was paid not to care. "You're going down the well in 12 days," he said. "If you want the leader of Earth, the hope and light of civilization, to get wheeled off the shuttle in a chair, you can stop. If you want her to stride out in front of the cameras like a Valkyrie returned from the underworld and ready for battle, you go for 12. "Sadistic fuck! You're the one who fell behind on your exercise schedule. I've been saving the fucking species. Saving humanity doesn't prevent bone density loss or muscular atrophy," he said. "And you're stalling. One more." "I hate you so much," she said, letting her knees bend, easing the steel plate back closer to her. She wanted to cry. She wanted to puke all over Peter's pretty white exercise shoes. She wanted to be doing anything else at all. "I know, sweetie, but you can do this," he said. "Come on." Avasarala screamed and pushed the steel plate away. Afterward, she sat on the fake wood bench in the locker room with her head in her hands until the idea of moving didn't disgust her. When she did finally stand up, the gray-clad woman in the mirror seemed unfamiliar. Not foreign, precisely, but certainly not her. Thinner, for one thing, with sweat stains at the armpits and under the breasts. White hair that didn't fall to her shoulders so much as flow out, the thin, lunar gravity too weak to pull it down. The woman in the mirror looked Avasarala up and down with dark, judgmental eyes. "Some fucking Valkyrie," Avasarala said, then headed for the shower. "You'll have to do." The good news was that Mars had finally slogged its way through its constitutional crisis, done the obvious thing, and put Emily Richards in as Prime Minister. No, that wasn't fair. There was more going well than just that. The rioting in Paris was under control now, and the racist cells in Colombia had been identified and isolated without any more murders. St. Petersburg had fixed its water recycling problem, at least for the moment. Gourmandlay's mystery yeast was doing everything it had claimed on the tin, which increased the overall food supply for the survivors, and the reactors in Cairo and Seoul were working again so they could make use of it. Fewer dead people. Or, at least fewer dead right now. Next week was always next week, and always would be. The bad news still outweighed the good. The second wave of deaths hadn't slowed yet. The medical infrastructure was saturated. Thousands of people were dying every week from conditions that even a year ago would have been easily treated or cured. The violence over resources hadn't by any means stopped either. There were vigilante raids in Boston and Mumbai. Reports of whole police forces going rogue and hoarding relief supplies in Denver and Phoenix. The oceans were being choked. The sludge of dust and debris wasn't sinking as quickly as the models had suggested, and the light-eating plants and microbiota were dying off as a result. If there hadn't been so many fucking human beings stressing the food webs over the last few centuries, the system might have been more robust. Or it might not have. It wasn't as though they had a second Earth to use as a control. History itself was a massive N equals one study, irreproducible. It was what made it so difficult to learn from. After her shower, she changed into a lime green sari, did her hair and her makeup. She was starting to feel a little better. It was the pattern she was noticing. The actual exercise left her miserable. But once she'd recovered, the rest of her day seemed to go a little better. If it was only the placebo effect, that was enough. She'd take what she could get, even if it was only tricks of the mind. When she was almost ready to face the rest of her day, she opened an audio-only connection to Saeed. "Where do we stand?" she said instead of hello. "The security group from Mars is finishing their meal," Saeed answered without missing a beat. "They'll be in the conference hall in half an hour. Admiral Souther will be there with you if you need him." "Always good to have a penis in uniform in the room," Avasarala said sourly. "God knows they might not take me seriously otherwise."
"If you say so, ma'am."
"It was a joke."
"If you say so, ma'am."
"There's also a report in from Ceres Station. Admiral Cohen has confirmed that the Giambattista is under burn just the way M.A. Osman promised." Avasarala held a pearl earring to her left ear, considering it. Nice. Understated. Didn't go with the sari, though. "I'm sorry, ma'am?" Saeed's voice was confused.
"I didn't say anything."
You growled."
"Did I?
Probably just an editorial comment about how pleased I am that we're trusting the fucking OPA now. Ignore it and continue."
"That's all you have on the schedule for today," he said, almost apologetically.
"You did ask me to keep the afternoon clear in case the security briefing went long."
"So I did," she said, trying a pair of aquamarine studs that were much better.
"Word from The Hague?"
"They say your office will be ready and the critical staff will be in place. We're on track to move the seat of governance back to the planet's surface on schedule."
She imagined she heard a certain pride in Saeed's voice at that. Well, good. He ought to be proud. They all ought to be. Earth might be a pile of corpses and shit, but it was their pile of corpses and shit. And she was tired of looking up at it from the moon.
"About fucking time," she said.
"All right, tell Souther I'm on my way. And to bring me a sandwich or something."
"What sort would you like? I can meet you with—"
"No, tell Souther to do it," she said. "He'll think it's funny." The conference room was the single most secure chamber in the solar system, but it didn't wear that on its sleeve. It was small enough for six people to sit comfortably. Red curtains on the walls to hide the air recyclers and the heaters. The table was wide, dark, and set just a little low to give a few centimeters more room for the holographic display. Not that anyone ever used holographic displays. Showy, but not functional. The Martian military attaché wasn't here to be wowed by graphic design, and Avasarala liked him for that. The man himself, Rhodes Chen, sat on one side of the table with his secretary and assistant to either hand. Souther was already there, too, when she arrived, leaning back in his chair and laughing with Rhodes. A small tin plate waited at her chair, white bread and cucumbers. When Chen saw her, he stood, and all the others with him, she waved him back down.
"Thank you for coming," she said. "I wanted to be sure our allies on Mars were entirely up to date on the situation with the Free Navy."
"Prime Minister Richards sends her regrets," Chen said, taking his seat. "Things are still unsettled back at home, and she didn't feel comfortable being physically absent from the government building."
"I understand," Avasarala said.
"And your wife, Michaela, is she feeling better?"
Chen blinked.
"Why, yes. Yes, she's doing much better, thank you."
Avasarala turned to Souther.
"Admiral Chen's wife went to the cooperative school with my daughter Ashanti when they were girls," she said. Not that Chen remembered that or had even known.
In fairness, the girls hadn't been particularly close, but you played the angles the universe gave you. She picked up her sandwich, took a bite, and put it back down to give Chen a moment to hide his discomfort. "I'm going to have to ask your staff to leave," Avasarala said. "They can be trusted," Chen said, nodding as if he'd agreed. "Not by me, they can't," Avasarala said. "We won't hurt them, but they can't stay." Chen sighed. His secretary and assistant politely gathered up their things, nodded to Souther and Avasarala, and left. Souther lowered his head, waiting for the system to report whether either had left anything behind. It would be sad to come this far and have a bug in the room. A moment later, he shook his head. "Now then," she said, "shall we get down to business?" Chen didn't object, and Souther pulled up a schematic of the solar system in its present state. The sun and the ring gate as the major axis, and the planets and moons, stations and asteroids scattered as the laws of orbital mechanics had placed them. As with any tactical map on that scale, the proportionality had suffered a little in favor of visibility. In truth, all of humanity's children lived on scattered stones smaller than dust on the face of the ocean. They hid the fact with graphics and highlighted lists of ship names and vectors. Had the map matched the territory, there would have been nothing to see. Even the Earth, with her suffering billions, would have been less than a pixel. But the Free Navy showed there in yellow, the Consolidated Fleet in red, Michio Pa's breakaway ships and their new OPA, let's call them allies, in gold. It was rough and ugly. Souther pulled up a pointer and drew the room's attention to the ring gate at the system's edge. "Our target is Medina Station," he said in his oddly high-pitched musical voice. "There are several reasons for that, but critically, it's the choke point for passage through the colony systems, including Laconia, where former Martian naval officer Winston Duarte appears to have set up shop. Whoever has possession of Medina and its defenses controls the ring gates and traffic through them. It will reopen trade and colonization ships for us and cut Inaros' supply lines from his ally." Chen leaned forward, his elbows on the table, eyes glittering with the reflection of the display. He hadn't reacted at all to Duarte's name. Good poker face, and he'd expected to hear it. Richards wasn't trying to deny the Martian Navy's role in this clusterfuck. That was good. She took another bite of the sandwich and wished she'd thought to bring some pistachios. She didn't have much of an appetite right after lifting weights, but when it returned, she was ravenous. "Inaros's method of operation up to now has relied on strategic retreat," Souther continued. "Stripping and abandoning territory rather than trying to hold it, and leaving the support of the people left behind to the Consolidated Fleet. It has served him well in that we have been reluctant to overextend our defensive force, and the Free Navy has been able to carry out raids and attacks of opportunity on both Earth and Martian forces and dissenting factions on their own side." "The pirates," Chen said. "The pirates," Avasarala agreed. No need to beat around that particular bush. "We believe that strategy will fail with Medina," Souther said. "Its importance is too great to abandon. And if we're wrong, and the Free Navy does abandon it, well then we have all the advantages we were hoping for, and he looks like a joke."
"He won't abandon it," Avasarala said.
"What about the railguns?" Chen asked. An interesting move, showing that Mars already knew about the defensive artillery. She wasn't quite certain what letting her know they knew that was meant to achieve. Souther glanced at her. She nodded. No reason to pretend ignorance. "Our best intelligence on that comes from the defectors from the Free Navy. Captain Pa of the Connet was one of Inaros's inner circle. Our understanding is that the railguns set up on the alien station are Medina's first line of defense. The station proper also had PDCs and a supply of torpedoes left by Duarte, but the railguns are set to defend and destroy any unauthorized ships that pass through the ring gates.
That seems like a problem, Chen said. Your thoughts on how to overcome that?
We're going to send a shitload of ships through the ring gates, Avasarala said as Souther shifted from tactical to an image of the Giambattista. It wasn't a pretty ship. Large, boxy, and awkward. This is a converted water hauler crewed by the Osman Jasinski faction of the Outer Planets Alliance, Souther said. It has been loaded with slightly under 4,000 small craft, breaching pods, small transports, prospecting skiffs, a devil's brew. We're calling it our Suriname Toad, but the ship's registered as the Giambattista.
That thing has 4,000 reactors in it? Chen said.
No, Souther said. Most of the engines are chemical rockets or compressed gas thrusters. Many of them are hardly more than environment suit thrusters welded to a steel box. That is part of the reason they're being carried to the edge of the ring before they're ever deployed. These aren't long-range craft. At a guess, I'd say half of them would be hard-pressed to make the trip from the ring gate to Medina under the best of circumstances. There are also several thousand torpedoes with a mixed but generally low-yield assortment of warheads.
So, chaff, Chen said. Cannon fodder.
We're not putting people on all of them, Avasarala said. Even the OPA is not that suicidal. Souther went on. A fraction, the best ships, will carry a ground attack group, whose mission will be to take control, not of Medina, but of the railgun emplacements themselves. Once our forces control those, we expect Medina Station to capitulate. And since the railguns were intended to defend Medina from more than 1,300 gates, and we're only going to focus on the Sol and Laconia gates, we have reason to expect a relatively strong defensive position, which we can reinforce not only from Sol, but with the colony ships that have already passed through and are willing and able to come to our assistance.
All right, Chen said.
You sound skeptical, Avasarala said.
No offense, ma'am, Chen said, but I'm looking at this, and it doesn't square.
If Anaros has been trying to tempt the fleet into overreach, spreading our forces too thin, then this run out to the edge of the system seems like his dream scenario.
Unless you're planning to send it unescorted, in which case you might as well not send it at all.
The escort will be a salvaged Martian corvette with a keel-mounted railgun of its own, Souther said. The Rocinante is already burning on an intercept course. It's going from Tycho Station, so it's in the neighborhood, relatively speaking. There are also advantages to having that particular asset in place on Medina when we take it, Avasarala said.
Chen's laugh was thin and despairing.
Avasarala stretched her right leg, feeling the ache in it. It would be worse in the morning. Lifting weights was an argument against a benign god, as if that needed more evidence.
Why bother, then? Chen asked. A single escort ship and an old ice hauler heading out to the most sensitive strategic position in the system?
I don't mean to be rude, but I have to think you don't like the people in those ships very much.
They're going to have the whole Free Navy chasing them out and turning them to slag before they're a million clicks from the ring gate.
That, Souther said, remains to be seen. If Chen had been a dog, his ears would have gone up just then. Avasarala saw it in his face and the set of his shoulders.
This, she said, is why we need to talk. In private. Securely.
I need assurances, Mr. Chen, that the rot at the heart of your navy was well and truly burned out.
I trust Emily Richards to look out for her own best interests, and Mars's too, in that order. And I've done a deep background check on you.
Excuse me? Avasarala put out her hands, palms facing each other about a meter apart.
I've got a report on you this thick. I know every pimple you've popped since your voice broke. everything. Praiseworthy, shameful, indifferent. Everything. I have violated your privacy in ways you can't imagine. Chen went white, then red. Well, he said.
I don't give a shit about any of it, she said. The only thing I cared about was whether you had the stink of Duarte on your fingers.
You don't. It's why you're in this room. Because I trust you to take this back to Richards and no one else. And I need to know if you trust Mars.
The silence in the room was profound. Chen pressed his fingers to his lips.
With this?
Maybe.
I get the sense you're making some kind of request here.
You should be very clear and explicit if that's the case.
I want Richards to instruct the remnants of the Martian Navy, the ships in the Consolidated Fleet and the ones you have in reserve as well, to coordinate closely with Earth and the OPA and the fucking pirate fleet.
To do what?
Run a distraction campaign, Souther said.
Avasarala waved him back, leaned in toward Chen, a smile on her lips.
Inaros isn't going to chase after the Giambattista and Rocinante, because he'll be distracted by the largest and most aggressive fleet action in history, kicking his balls up into his throat. By the time he understands what we're really after, it'll be too late for him to do anything but hold his dick and cry. But I need to know that you're in.
Chen blinked. His reserve cracked just a little.
Well, he said, when you put it like that,